broadband internet service providers in Real Simple Syndication are proud to bring you
Carlin and Jordan's Most Excellent Movie Night.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Carlin and Jordan's Most Excellent Movie Night. That is Jordan.
And that over there is Carlin.
Today we're tackling a film that was Jordan's pick.
Yes.
A 1990 flick called Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
That's right.
I had to draw it out because it was epic back in the day.
Oh, you know what? I still think it was fairly epic.
Yeah, you have a confession about this, don't you?
I do. In fact, yeah. This true thing, I had never seen any of the Turtles movies before.
For shame. For shame. Are you not a child of the 80s?
In a lot of ways, I am.
When were you born?
1983.
Exactly. You were a child. You are a product of the 80s. There's no reason you shouldn't have seen at least this movie.
What can I say? I never got around to it.
You let me down, Jordan. You let me down.
You would be surprised at the number of franchises that our generation is supposed to be in love with that I have, like, no connection to, you know, from my childhood. Aside from, like little snippets here and there. I never even saw, like, the animated series that everybody loves.
Of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
I never saw more than two or three episodes.
All right.
So
there are problems with you.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think everybody would agree with that.
Okay, let me ask you some more questions.
Okay.
Did you see Voltron? Did you ever watch the Voltron series?
No.
Okay, do that. Awesome. Transformers series?
No, not really.
Do it. G.I. Joe series?
No.
Okay. Well, you're lost.
Yeah, my childhood was a little...
What did you watch? Denver the Last Dinosaur, come on.
No.
Dinosaucers.
That sounds awesome, but no.
Okay, well, look into these.
No, I mean, it's like, part of it was because I was a military family and we moved around a lot. Never had cable growing up.
Oh, okay.
So, what I had was very limited.
You had rocks to play with.
Yeah, well, I mean, I did have a pet rock when I was a child.
Nice.
Mostly my entertainment came in the form of imagination.
Which is good.
Yeah,
I guess that's why you role play a lot.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. And also, I was a big reader as a child. From the very beginning, I was a big fan of the Hardy Boys and stuff like that. So I was always into reading and comic books and and when I say comic books, I mean stuff like Calvin and Hobbes and Garfield and stuff like that. And didn't get into superheroes until later in life. But actually, you know, that actually ties back into this because Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is one of the first modern comic book movies that we know of.
Right.
You know, of course, Superman was around in the 80s and Batman was in the 90s, but this was a completely different kind of comic book movie than either of those two because of what it focused on and how it presented the material. So that's something we can talk about a little bit more.
Which, by the way, I actually have some of the comics.
Oh, do you?
The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle comics, yeah. And it's very different.
Oh, yeah.
Very different. One of the main differences being every one of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles in the comics have red bandanas
on
their
eyes.
Yeah,
they all wear the same mask.
It's exactly the same. So you can't tell them apart except for when they're wielding their weapons.
In fact, I think I like that a little bit better, you know, that you can't tell them apart. Because then the writer has to work harder to make you feel the tone of their voice differently.
It's kind of more serious material in the comics as well. It's darker stuff.
Yeah.
But that happens with a lot of these adaptations.
Yeah.
You know?
They lighten it up. So do you want me to go ahead and read the Netflix summary?
By all means.
So here it is. After exposure to a strange glowing ooze, four mutant turtles train as ninjas in the sewers and fight crime wherever they find it.
They do.
And that really doesn't tell much of this much of the story, but it does give you enough of an idea to get you interested at least. So yeah, this is I think one of the big films of our generation, you know, like giving you an idea of what's going on here.
You want to tell me how big it was? Or you want me to tell you?
Go ahead.
I will tell you how big it was. So big that it cost $13.5 million to make, and it made in the box office $201,970,000.
Really?
That is a big payoff.
That is an incredible payoff.
And something tied to that I will tell you later. But go ahead, talk about who was in it.
Well, it was directed by a guy named Steve Barron. And he's directed a whole bunch of different things.
Coneheads.
Coneheads was one of his big ones. He's also done, he did The Adventures of Pinocchio, the one that starred that kid from Home, not Home Alone, Home Improvement.
Jonathan Taylor Thomas.
Yeah. Yeah, which was interesting. He also did...
Don't ask me how I know. I just...
We'll let that one go.
It's just weird. Yeah. It's just... Things stick with me for no reason. I did watch that show when I was young, Home Improvement. So.
He also directed several pieces of work about Michael Jackson, including Michael Jackson Number Ones in 2003.
He did a popular TV show, Merlin.
He did Merlin.
A lot of people liked that when it was on.
He did a movie in 2006 called Choking Men, which looks really interesting. So he's done a lot of other work in addition to Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I'm a little surprised that he actually didn't come back for the sequel as well. You know, but apparently that was not in his, not in the cards for him.
It was such a, it's kind of weird because it was so well received that wouldn't you just kind of stick with the same person? Although I don't really know the circumstances. I don't know if it was a situation where he was like, yeah, I did the first one. I don't really feel like doing anymore.
Yeah.
Because that's certainly happened before.
Yeah, it has. Now, the turtles themselves, and I thought this was cool. The turtles themselves were people in costumes.
Yes.
But they were actually Muppeteers. Uh-huh. They were members of the Jim Henson Company. So
yes.
They don't.
Jim Henson's Creature Shop.
Yeah, so they don't get as much credit as the voice actors do. I'm not really sure exactly the names of the people in the costumes, but we'll go ahead and give you the names of the voice actors.
But let me tell you real quick, those costumes still look good today.
They do. In fact, that was one of the best things about the movie was that
practical effects.
The practical effects looked fantastic.
Yes, they did. And that's the thing. Practical effects, when they're done right, are always better. Like, they're so good. And I think it just speaks to how the Jim Henson Creature Shop does things.
Yeah.
Because everything that I've known they've been involved with, it is top-notch quality stuff.
Yeah. So, Raphael was voiced by Josh Pais. Leonardo was voiced by David Foreman. And then also he was, like, they had, like, a scene when they were younger. And when they were younger, he was voiced by Brian Tachi. Donatello was voiced, I could talk this without, by Leif Tilden. And Michelangelo was voiced by Michelin Sisti, which is a pretty interesting name. Now, Splinter was played by Kevin Clash. And Kevin Clash is the guy who played Elmo all the way up until 2012.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. That's interesting.
Which surprised me a lot that Elmo and Splinter were the same guy.
Well, they're both furry puppets.
Yeah.
So there's the tie-in.
That is true. And the Shredder was played by James Saito. April O'Neil.
Man, he's gotten huge.
Yeah, he has. He has.
All these people, it's like, no, they went nowhere.
Yeah. A lot of them were like, oh, yeah, they're people. And then,
except there is someone who had a really small role in this who went somewhere.
Oh, really? Who was that?
Sam Rockwell.
Really?
You didn't notice Sam Rockwell in the film?
I didn't notice him.
He's one
probably
of the,
because he wasn't naked.
Yeah, nice. He was one of the scumbag youths.
Oh, was he?
Involved with the Foot Clan.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, oh, go back and look, because he's there. It's like a young Sam Rockwell. And I always love those moments when you see someone who became something big.
Yeah.
And you're like, wow, this was like before anything really took off for them.
Yeah.
Much like Jennifer Aniston in the movie Leprechaun.
Yeah, that's right. Like, all the actors and actresses who get their start in low-budget horror movies that nobody knows about.
Yep.
But Judith Hogue played April O'Neil, and Elias Koteas played Casey Jones.
Which he's done okay.
Yeah, I mean, he's done all right. I mean,
he was, I believe, in the remake of Let the Right One In, Let Me In. I think he played Hakan's character, you know, the caretaker of Ely.
Yeah, let me go ahead and just double check that for you.
He also did a pretty good job in the movie Haunting in Connecticut, which overall is not a great movie. Like, the storyline kind of fell apart a bit, but let me tell you, it is scary as hell.
I'm not seeing him listed as being a part of Let Me In, but he has done a lot of really good things. Like, he was in Now You See Me, which was a movie from 2013 that was really good. He was also on... he was also in... oh, yeah, I'm sorry. He was in Let Me In, but he was listed as the policeman.
Oh, thank you. I thought you had me questioning myself.
Yeah, I didn't mean to do that.
At least I was right that he was in it. I was wrong about the role in there.
But he was also in Shutter Island.
Oh, okay.
Which is a really good movie.
See, he's gotten roles.
Yeah, he was in a movie that I really liked, Defendor, okay. From 2009. That
is it based on the video game?
No, it's not. Okay. It's Woody Harrelson starring he was starring as a guy who was developmentally disabled, mm-hmm. but wanted to be a superhero.
Wow.
So he became a vigilante, and it was
that
a pretty
sounds cool.
It was a really intense movie and was really good.
I'll check that out.
But he was also Elias Koteas was also in like Zodiac and
was he?
Yeah, and he was also in Shooter and a whole bunch.
He's been in good films.
Yeah, he's been in a bunch of good stuff.
Oh, so he doesn't get like huge roles.
Yeah,
but he gets in good films.
But he gets in good films. He was in The Thin Red Line.
I think he's a good actor.
Yeah,
and I think he did a good job with Casey Jones.
Yeah,
What
it was supposed to be. Unfortunately, I didn't feel like Casey Jones. I know Casey Jones is a big Turtles character.
But he just didn't matter in the context of the film.
In the context of the film, he just was an extra.
I think it's just one of those things where it was coming off of a franchise,
right.
You know, a TV show, animated show that was very important to a lot of kids, and a toy line.
Yes.
And so they're like, well, we can't just have the Turtles. Like, if you throw in someone else that's popular, then people will be like, oh, yeah, that's so awesome. And speaking of that... well, first, let me backpedal a little bit. The people who did the script, a person named Todd Langan actually did the screenplay, which he mainly just done, like, screenplay stuff. The story was done by Bobby Herbeck, and Bobby Herbeck had done some writing on some TV shows around that time, including Different Strokes,
really?
The Jeffersons, and a show called Small Wonder. So he had had some work. The original stuff we were talking about, it was derived from comic books, which were started in 1984, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle comics, and they were done by Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird. And then after that, they made toys off of that, and then they made a TV show, the animated one, and then that's when the movies came, was after that. So it kind of turned into a little bit of like an empire.
Yeah, and you know what? From what I understand, it was all meant as kind of a joke. Because they were trying to take the most ridiculous idea that they could come up with and make it into a comic book. In fact, the name of their comic studio that started the Turtles is Mirage Entertainment.
Oh.
And that's supposed to be... Mirage Entertainment is supposed to represent... This is all just a joke. You know,
right.
We're not really seriously going at this. But it is one of the most well-known independent comic franchises in history. It was never published by... DC, never by Marvel.
Sure.
Now it's published by Image, but Image is all creator owned. You know, so they've had, and the comic books have been ongoing for a long time. They're running right now, in fact.
Wow.
So
that's pretty cool.
I might actually be more inclined to get into the comic book series than I am.
Yeah, check it out. I remember it being interesting, but I mean, it's been a long time since I read it.
Yeah.
As far as the, when this film came up, they had a script, they were trying to get someone to take it. A lot of studios passed on the script.
Because of technical reasons?
No, because of Masters of the Universe. Okay, as we know, He-Man was a huge...
Another big deal.
Yes, huge animated series in the 80s. People loved He-Man. Then they made the Masters of the Universe movie. Flopped terribly.
Yeah.
So a lot of studios were afraid of taking a massively popular animated series and turning it into a movie. So a lot of studios were like, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, I don't know. Masters of the Universe was a mess, so I don't know if we can do that.
That's this. Probably why they waited until until the 2000s to make G.I. Joe and Transformers movies.
Maybe, yeah. It was further removed. So New Line Cinema ended up being the one to take it. But listen to all the studios that passed. Walt Disney, Columbia Pictures, MGM, Orion, Paramount, and Warner Brothers.
Wow.
And how much you want to bet after it came out and they saw what the box office numbers were, they were like, damn it. Because, once again, to reiterate, it cost $13.5 million to make.
Which is chump change.
It made $201.97 million.
Yeah.
Huge profit.
Yeah.
Huge profit.
And that's not even factoring in the toy line. It's not factoring in, you know, like residuals.
I know.
Like bed sheets, you know.
All sorts of stuff you can spin off it. So, wow, yeah.
Well, and you know what? I wouldn't see this as a mainstream Disney movie, but I would definitely see it under Touchstone. You know what I mean? I think that it would, that's what where it would make most sense to me is a Touchstone film. But, New Line, they lucked out. They really lucked out where everybody else was, they were turning their nose up at a very successful franchise there. And we're only talking about $200 million for the first movie. The sequel, Secret of the Ooze, is considered to be even better in a lot of ways, from what I understand. But
while you talk, I'm gonna look it up on IMDb.
I know that the last one, where they go back in time. I've talked about this with friends before, but that one is fairly universally panned in terms of critical reception. So I'm not sure how it actually did in the box office, but I do know that. You know, the first one and the second one are both very well received in terms of...
I am interested to see if the second one made more money or what that was like. Okay, so here it is. So, the second one, the budget was $25 million.
So they upped the budget.
They upped the budget way, way high.
They doubled it.
And the box office return was $78.66 million.
Interesting.
Returns way less.
Yeah.
Way less.
Still technically successful, but not as wildly successful as this one.
And apparently, when they made the second one, it was distributed by New Line Cinema domestically and in Canada, but 20th Century Fox distributed it internationally.
I wonder if that had an effect.
I don't know.
You know, because if New Line produced it, then 20th Century Fox might not have pushed as hard to get it out internationally, and that might have been where the shortfall was.
Yeah. Hard to know.
Yeah. Oh, very hard to know.
But, so, when the movie starts...
There's a crime wave in New York City.
The message is, New York is where the scumbags are.
Well, don't you know that? I mean...
Well, honestly, during the time, in 1990, that was kind of everyone's perception of New York City.
Well, I mean, still, like, the 70s and 80s, for about 20 years there... New York City was considered to be like one of the scariest places in the planet. So I can understand why they would say, oh, crime is centralized there.
Yeah.
And
in the beginning, something else that I realized is criminals eat Burger King Whoppers. It's in there. Because the kids are stealing all the stuff and it's showing them like getting all of it together. And one of the kids who's like inventorying all the stolen crap has... It's product placement. It's a Burger King Whopper box. But here's the thing. Was Burger King like, yes, well, let's make it the burger of criminals?
Well, I do know that Domino's is the pizza of heroes.
Yes, because it's a Domino's pizza delivery person who brings the Ninja Turtles their pizza.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure there was some crossover promotion
going on there.
So. But, I just thought that was funny because I was like, you know product placement when you see it.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
Like, it's never subtle. And in this case, I was like, really? Like, Burger King's okay with it being associated with something bad in this film? It's kind of weird.
Right, but in addition to being bad in the film, the Foot Clan and their minions are all children, you know. Right. So in addition to, you know, the turtles being heroes that you can identify with, the main target audience of the film was still kids. So right. The kids could identify with the criminals just as much as they could identify with the turtles.
Okay.
You know, so either way, they're getting the kids' attention on Burger King or Domino's.
That's criminals have to eat too, huh?
Exactly.
They got to eat. They love those Whoppers, man.
Yeah.
The lunch, dinner, breakfast of criminals, Burger King.
Now I kind of want Burger King.
Only criminals, Jordan.
Well, I haven't told you what I stole today.
Which, okay, since we're on that topic, I really wanted to say, okay, Shredder is supposed to be this massive badass.
Yeah.
Like, knows martial arts, he's scary, he's like a super villain.
He was kind of a pansy-looking little guy.
Well, here's the thing, though. This is supposed to be, like, some big, like, crime empire he has, right?
Right.
It's children who commit petty theft.
Yeah.
When you really think about it,
it's really not that intimidating. It's
very unimpressive. Right. It is
the
most unbadass empire, period.
We will steal from everybody. But we'll only steal, like, wallets and televisions they leave sitting out on fire escapes.
It's like all petty friggin' theft. It's like,
yeah.
All right, what's our big haul? Well, we got a lot of old ladies' purses today.
Yeah.
Ha-ha, my evil plans are all in place.
It really doesn't make a lot of sense unless he's using the children, like he's using that as a way to figure out what kids are going to succeed later on. It's almost kind of, this might sound weird, but it's almost an Oliver Twist kind of situation where Fagin was sending out Oliver and the Artful Dodger and all of those guys to steal things that then they would fence. You know, so there could be money in that, but again, they call it a silent crime wave. So they're trying to stay under the radar, but they're also trying to be illicit at the same time. I don't think it would have worked as well as maybe, say, Wall Street fraud, but still, you know. And also, you got to remember that Shredder is a recent immigrant to the United States. You know, which, interesting statement about immigrants, but we'll put that aside for a moment to say that, you know, he doesn't have a lot of capital in terms of starting up his criminal empire.
So this is kind of his beginning.
So this is his beginning.
You got to start small.
Yeah, you got
to get big.
Yeah, and so.
And then you end up in a dumpster.
Yeah, just as much as this is
truck.
Just as much as this is the Turtles' origin story, it's just as much the Shredder's origin story. Unfortunately, it fails at the end.
Right.
Aren't unfortunately. What am I talking about? Maybe my Burger King.
Because you love Burger King. I figured you out. You are a Burger King head. One thing I can say, interestingly enough, is I was watching this and I actually saw parallels between the Foot Clan and ISIS.
Do explain.
And here's what it is. The Foot Clan is obviously preying on youth who feel alienated and can't rationally think. ISIS does the same thing. They recruit young people who don't think rationally and they're feeling alienated from society. And they're trying to pull them in and say, hey, we got a place for you. You right. want to be a badass? You want to, you know, support a cause? Come and do it.
Most terrorist organizations look for young men. Yeah,
because they're young and impressionable and the rationale is not there. Mm-hmm. The critical thinking is not what it should be because the minds are still developing.
Mm-hmm.
And the Foot Clan was doing the same thing.
Right.
So I thought it was kind of interesting because I'm sitting there and I'm like, I see a parallel between the Foot Clan and ISIS. Which is odd.
It's very scary, actually.
Yeah. I mean, ISIS is a modern-day Foot Clan.
Except they don't wear the bug-eyed helmets.
No, which look really stupid. Like, what's the function of that, honestly?
Well, it protects
your eyes. Well, I
guess
you can't be poked in the eye
right.
when you're fighting.
Yeah. But other than that...
Seeing through that mesh is probably kind of hard.
I don't know. I mean, fencers wear mesh masks all the time.
They do. But both of the people fencing are wearing it.
Exactly.
So it's like on
so
equal
there's
footing.
A little bit of a disadvantage for both of them.
Yeah, exactly. So, I don't know. But moral of the story is, eat your Burger King, criminals. That's the only thing I got from this movie, honestly, was No, I'm kidding.
Really?
I'm kidding.
Okay, know. Well, I mean, there you go.
The music is so friggin' 80s in this.
Yeah, but I didn't have a problem with that.
No, I mean, I was putting that as a strength.
It felt like it was supposed to, because this is an 80. Okay, so every decade doesn't really start in when the clock switches over from like 89 to 90. Really, it starts in about 1992, 1993
right.
for real decade trends to pick up. So this still is very much an 80s movie in a lot of ways. And that's perfectly fine. I mean, it's even though I hadn't seen the Turtles before, it was enough of an idiom that I felt comfortable with because I was familiar with other 80s movies.
Mm-hmm. You were like, this is my childhood.
Yeah.
Even though I didn't see it during my childhood.
I didn't see it in my childhood, but I knew enough of the story and enough about the Turtles to identify with it.
Because you knew it was a big thing, though.
Exactly.
You knew it. I mean, it was around. I'm sure you'd seen the action figures.
Oh, yeah. I had played with the action figures at friends' houses and stuff like that. So
my parents still have tubs of them from me.
I'm sure they're worth something now.
Well, yeah, they might be, but the Star Wars action figures I have are definitely worth something, including my nice Millennium Falcon that I have with the original box.
Are you trying to distract me from the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
Just saying. I actually have all those toys here at my house.
Nice.
Just saying. Anyway.
Oh, did you notice the another product placement that was in the movie? There was a poster for Critters at the back of it.
Oh, was there? No, I didn't see that.
Yeah, there was a poster for Critters in one of the
back scenes.
That's
a movie we should review if it's ever on Netflix.
Oh, fun Critters. Stuff.
Oh, wait. Were you talking about something different? I thought you meant Critters the movie.
Yeah, Critters the movie.
Yeah, horror film.
Uh-huh.
Well, quote, horror film.
Yeah.
It's a lot of comedy to
it.
Yeah, we should do Critters.
We'll have to look it up and see if
it's there. One of the things that kind of got to me is that all the Ninja Turtles have a accent of, you know, West Coast California, yet for some reason Raphael is very New York accent.
Yeah, well, and that kind of put me off in a lot of ways.
It makes no sense.
Yeah, because, well, here's the deal, is that the Turtles' lingo that they use, their common vernacular, is that of the surfer boy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, they use terms like bodacious, wild
cowabunga.
Man, cowabunga dude.
Bossa Nova.
Yeah. You know, so, I don't know how that one worked in, but yeah. But
it was there.
It was there. I remember it. But it Bossa Nova, to me, is always associated with Brazil. But to me, the way that they were talking did not sound like New York City. Like, the words that they were using sounded like the
West
story
Coast.
Should have been placed on the West Coast.
Yeah, like L.A. or something.
L.A., maybe even Miami.
Yeah.
You know, someplace that wasn't New York.
The only person who made sense there was Raphael.
Yeah, yeah. And even then, it felt... But also, Raphael was the one who would go out. He would wear costumes and go out and go to movies and things like that. So it kind of makes sense that his approach was more standard New Yorker than the rest of the Turtles, because they spent all their time in the sewers, and he was the one who was going. But even then, you could still hear a bit of a New York accent in some of the other ones as well.
Oh, I couldn't.
Oh, like when they ordered the pizza, and he's like, yeah, just stick it down here in this drain. You know, I could hear a bit of a New York twinge in that.
Well, maybe I need to pay a little more attention, but no, I didn't really get a whole lot. I will say, you know the first time that Raphael runs into Casey Jones and they're fighting?
Yeah.
And Casey Jones runs away, and then Raphael's running after him. I remember very, very clearly watching this when I was young, and the moment where he's running and he stops because he can't catch him, and he's like, come back here, I ain't finished with you. And then he's like, damn! I remember being like, ooh!
How could he say that?
Yeah, like, I remember thinking it was so, like, badass that he swore.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you're young, you're not supposed to say those things. And I was like, oh, man!
Yeah. Well, you know, they knew how to get to their target audience.
Oh, yeah. We were talking about the 80s style music and how it made sense.
Oh,
there.
Absolutely,
it was fine,
yeah.
But I will say there were a few moments that I noticed where, like, they're fighting, and I felt like the music was a little too
upbeat
and comedic, that it was just kind of like, okay, is this fight a joke? Are we supposed to be like, they're just having fun fighting?
Right.
Like, I don't know.
They also did things like, they made, like, swooshing noises.
Like,
it was a very comedic, like, overtone to the fighting. And we kind of have talked about this on previous episodes about how fighting that doesn't show blood is almost worse to show children.
Yeah.
Because, they get this wrong idea about what happens when you smack somebody with a rock. You know, the violence that they see on film is so sanitized that it takes it into a level of just pure fantasy and wish fulfillment. And that kind of is something that happens here in this movie by adding the sound effects. And again, that music cues that are really kind of upbeat and everything like that. It makes it feel more like a comic book or a cartoon where, you know, oh yeah, he's going to get hit on the head with an anvil, but he's going to get up and keep on trying to hit Casey Jones with that baseball bat.
Yeah, and the music they have in this film, especially during the fights, and the tone, is it's like, oh, we're having fun, violence is fun, and funny.
Well, and the turtles do seem to really enjoy getting into fights.
Oh, they love it.
Oh,
They're just, like, enjoying the hell out of it. They're just like, yeah, I love beating the crap out of people, yeah.
Which I don't think goes into to the ninja code, but...
No, and it is a bad thing because, I even remember when I was growing up, you know, I watched these shows, I watched this movie, I watched Ninja Turtles show, I watched G.I. Joe, like, all that kind of stuff. And I remember I would go out and I'd play guns.
Yeah.
I would fake fight with my friends, and there was one instance when I was in elementary school, I remember being on the playground, and my buddy and I were fake fighting, and I actually punched him in the nose, and then I got in trouble.
Of course, yeah.
And I'm like, well, we're just having fun.
Right, exactly.
And that was fun. Violence is fun.
Kids don't recognize the consequences of it.
Right, they don't.
Yeah, I remember... I actually was not allowed to play with guns because when...
Probably a good thing.
Well, here's the thing. I made every stick I could find into a gun. Mm-hmm. But the reason being was that my grandparents would allow me to play with toy guns at their house.
Oh.
And when I was very little, I had a toy gun that my grandmother had sent me. And apparently I picked it up, and within maybe an hour of receiving this gift, I smacked my mom in the head with it.
Did you? You beat her with the butt of the rifle?
I did. I pistol whipped my mom as a 3-year-old.
That is a great quote for people to hear out of context.
No, I don't think so.
I pistol whipped my mom with a toy gun when I was a 3-year-old.
Yeah, so, but because of that, my parents never let me play with guns. On a regular basis. You know, I figured out how to make sticks into guns and all that. But, you know, it wasn't something that they would allow me to have as gifts or anything like that. And I think, honestly, my childhood was probably better because of that.
Yeah.
You know?
No problem.
But anyway, as an adult, watching this movie and understanding, you know, the consequence of violence...
Right.
It is a bit amusing to watch the movie and see the comedic value that's put into the fights. As a kid, I don't think it would be appropriate. But as an adult,
right.
It's cartoonish, it's funny, and it moves the story along pretty quickly. It's always fun to get to that big action adventure piece. And
it does do that, but honestly, my critique of it is I feel like it was too fast. I feel like the pacing's way... Just the pacing in general is too fast. Like, things are just... It feels like I wanted to slow down a little bit so you could kind of flesh out some more, like, real story.
Yeah.
Instead of just like, okay, when's the next fight? Fight, fight, fight. You know, it...
Yeah.
It seems like they were just trying to get to that next fight, pretty much. Except for when they were at that old house.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was like, oh, we want to have
some... And we want to drag this out.
Funny things. And,
yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't... This is a movie that I'm unhappy I watched as an adult.
Oh, really?
Because I loved it so much when I was young, and since I just watched it again as an adult, I feel like it ruined it for me.
Did it?
Yeah, pretty much.
I'm sorry.
The magic is gone, Jordan. It's all your fault.
How could I do this to you?
Well...
I feel like I destroyed your childhood, my friend.
It happens, I guess. It happens.
So what would you change? What would you change to make... grown-up Carlin enjoyed this movie better?
Slow it down. Might have to actually just make it longer and have some more, like, backstory on a lot of things. Like, the backstory of, like, Shredder and everything is just... It's not very good.
It's very glossed over.
Yeah, it's glossed over. It's not very good. We already talked about he's not really a badass because he's just overseeing petty thefts and, like...
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's... But at the same time, it's not made for grown-ups. And obviously, if I enjoyed it so much as a kid... It served its purpose.
Right.
So.
Yeah, and I mean, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it for what it was. I wouldn't necessarily watch it out for my own enjoyment again. Because I don't have that kind of, oh, relive your childhood with this film.
Right.
You know, it did bring back certain aspects of childhood that I enjoyed. But I don't think it would be something that I would watch again. I think I would... My brother's about 12 now, so I think I would sit down and watch it with him.
See what he thinks.
Oh, yeah, I think he would enjoy it, honestly. He'd be like,
was this popular back then?
Well, you know, this is... Okay, so this is kind of an interesting movie to show to him, because he's 12 years old, but he gets freaked out by Muppets.
Really?
Yeah, he does not like Muppets at all.
Interesting.
Yeah, so...
These aren't really Muppets. They're much larger. They're kind of more like human-type size, so...
Yeah.
Maybe it would be different. One thing I can say, though, related to the suits and everything, the voice acting, I felt, was very overemphasized.
Yeah.
And the actual talking was pretty drawn out. Like, they talked very slow when it was the voice acting.
Yeah.
I don't know if maybe that was because of how they had to operate the faces.
Yeah.
That maybe they couldn't move extremely fast, so they had to do that.
It did feel like it was a little drawn out.
Yeah. Like, when they're talking, it's like they're... having a hard time thinking and talking.
Well, what do you mean?
So I would like to have seen that changed, because I didn't really like that aspect. Another thing I didn't really like is, why is it in every single movie we have to have some sort of female infatuation?
Oh, yeah.
Especially if it's a movie for kids.
The deal with April and Casey?
Well, not just April and KC. All the Ninja Turtles wanted April. They're all like, yeah. Oh, she's so hot. Oh,
yeah, I don't...
Why are we trying to teach children, because that's who this is for.
Right.
Why are we trying to teach them, oh, look at this hot babe. Like, it just doesn't make sense to me.
Why do we think that the only kind of story has to have some kind of romantic entanglement to it as well? I mean, because...
Well, and that's the point. Yeah. It doesn't make sense for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Right.
It's dumb. It's idiotic to force that. And it's forced to force that in there.
But at least they're very open-minded, because a lot of people would say, well, that's speciesist, you know?
Yeah.
You know, so there is a bit of an open mind to the... to the turtles' infatuation with April, but also...
Bestiality, yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, she didn't go for any of them.
No, she didn't. She went for her own kind, which just goes to show how narrow-minded April actually is.
Yeah, she's a speciesist.
Yeah, how dare she?
She's practicing speciesism.
I can't believe we went there.
Well, I mean, sometimes the films just take us there.
No, yeah, they do. But April is a weird character in this film. Honestly.
Who lives in the seediest part of town.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think the way that they presented it was that her parents were immigrants and they opened up a shop in that neighborhood.
Yeah.
She lives above the shop. Her parents are gone, but she opens the store on part-time as like a remembrance of her father.
Yeah.
Which I thought was pretty cool.
When you saw the outside of the store, though...
It looked like a dump.
Well... And it's so dark and it just looked dangerous. And you're just like, how is she not getting mugged every single day?
And also...
Like, every day.
The TV station looked pretty sketchy that she was working at as well.
Yeah.
My experience with television stations is completely different from the way that one looked.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah. I interned at a TV station in college and stuff like that. So, I've been around my fair share. But also, one thing that I thought... was that April's relationship with her boss, Charles, was very weird. You know, because Charles would just randomly show up at her house.
Dude, he was a total creep.
He wouldn't call.
He's a creep.
He wouldn't call and say, hey, look, you need to back off on this story. He would show up on his way to work to complain to her about how she's doing her job. Why not wait until she gets in at the office and then you could do that?
Because he is a potential rapist.
Yeah, apparently, because that's how he's got his son. I guess, I don't know.
No mention of a mother or anything.
No.
Wait, just, is there? Maybe there is like
no, there's on. Just Charles and his kid.
Danny.
Danny, who's a member of the Foot Clan.
Damn it, Danny. Where did your life go wrong? It's those Whoppers. It's the damn Whoppers. Stop eating them.
No, not the Whoppers. Well, I mean...
You're having a hard time right now.
I'm trying not to laugh.
I threw you off.
Yeah, you did. But, so Charles, like... But April allows this to keep on going, you know? And maybe this is just 21st century 31-year-old Jordan talking. But if my boss kept on showing up at my house, I'd be like, no, this is off limits.
I'd smack him with a restraining order.
You know? Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, it's like...
Stop.
Work is for work, home is for home.
Right.
Don't mix the two. If you need to call me, okay, that's fine. I'll take your call. But don't follow me home.
Yeah. And especially not while I'm trying to shower.
Exactly. Exactly. Or if I have 4 6-foot-tall turtles hanging out in my house.
Yeah, exactly.
But another thing that I thought was really sad about her character is that she's not really shown as much of a reporter. No. You know, when you think of April O'Neil, the image that comes to your mind is crack reporter doing the reporting the news that nobody else will report. And she does do that to a certain degree.
Well, she doesn't really investigate and find stuff. Things just happen to her.
Things just happen and she just reports that they happened.
She's like, this happened to me.
Yeah.
It's just like she's fortunate to have bad things happen. It falls in her lap.
It's great for a journalist career, I guess.
She's a pretty helpless character, honestly, which isn't good because she's the only female character.
And this is something that made me kind of sad because her character was supposed to be the viewpoint character that you experience the turtles through.
Right.
You know, so you have a working woman who is supposed to be a person of power because, let's face it, journalism is one of the most powerful aspects of our society. Yeah. So she's a
gatekeeper to information.
A gatekeeper to information. She's someone who is independent, is supposed to be independent in her thought, and is supposed to be seen as a powerful role model for people. And she spends the entire movie being an observer and doesn't actually help bring the viewers into the story more.
Yeah. And she's when I said she's the only female character in this, it made me think, why weren't there any female Foot Clan members?
I saw one.
You did?
Yeah, I saw one walking around. But I wasn't sure if she was a Foot Clan member or someone like a hanger-on.
Yeah.
Because
I can't remember seeing any females.
There was one in there. She was wearing like a black hat and a spaghetti top.
Okay.
And I wasn't sure if she was there as eye candy or if she was there as a member of the gang.
Yeah.
But other than that, there weren't any female characters at all involved in the Foot Clan.
A little bothersome, but it was a different time.
It is. It
back
is.
Then,
it,
too.
And
we weren't as sensitive to these types of issues.
Well, and that's something that we try to remember is the context of when the film was made.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's not as big of a deal to me. If this film had been made now, which it was, but...
Yeah. Yes, it was.
But
Michael friggin' Bay, the worst in the world.
Yeah, I never...
I will never see Michael. I'm done. I saw Michael Bay films back in the day, and the last one I saw was the first Transformers, and I was like, no.
Yeah,
awful.
I haven't seen any of his other movies beyond that. But, you know, when it was like, yes, we're having a new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie. I'm like, okay, I might actually be able to watch this. It's Michael Bay. No.
No, I will not be able to watch this.
So, I mean... And then he casts for, again, the viewpoint character, April O'Neil, he casts Megan Fox, which has its own problems and innuendos attached to it.
Right.
Yeah.
Certainly.
So
one thing I want to talk about, if you're done on that topic, are you? Or did you have...
Yeah, I'm done, but something. I wanted to talk about something that was interesting. But yeah, go ahead and go with you. Go with yours.
I was just going to say real fast, when Raphael gets his ass kicked,
mm-hmm.
and he like crashes through the glass, it is comedically stupid how fast they're like, he's alive, but barely. Like, they didn't even like check his vitals or anything, or like put their ear near his mouth to see if he's breathing. They just like, as soon as he hits the ground, they're like, he's alive, but barely. How the hell do you know that?
He was a different shade of green. I don't know.
And then I really like how when they retreat to the house, they don't do a damn thing to try and heal him.
They put him in a tub of hot, warm water to raise his blood temperature.
My point, they do nothing to help him get better.
Right.
And they act like they're all concerned. Somebody go get something. Get some friggin' bandages.
Find
like,
a veterinarian.
Do something. Yeah. Like, they're just like, just throw him in this tub and I don't know. Maybe he'll heal himself. He'll die. I don't care.
Let's fix up a truck.
Yeah. It's like everyone's just like, well, let's wait and see if he lives or dies. In the meantime, we'll just find ways to keep ourselves occupied.
But another thing to remember is that these are supposed to be quote-unquote teenagers. So it could be that they don't know how to emotionally process
it. But there are
two
adults there.
Well, are they adults?
Well, they don't act like adults because they keep going back and forth with each other.
Right.
Which is, you know, the whole, like, I like you, so I'm going to be a dick to you type thing, which is so immature.
I like you, so I'm going to give you flowers and then punch you.
Yeah, basically, I like you, I'm going to pull your hair and chase you around.
Exactly.
Degrade you. Yeah, it's...
Casey Jones treated April O'Neil just like they were on a playground when they were in second grade.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. The thing that I wanted to bring up was that... And you, just like you were talking about with the Foot Clan and ISIS, I thought it was very interesting to see the parallels today of how the police departments and news corporations work together.
Mm, okay.
You know, because when April is reporting negatively on the police reaction to this silent crime wave, the police chief gets Danny's rap file and then goes and threatens Charles the Creeper, the station manager, and says, if you don't stop reporting on us, we're going to throw your son in jail.
Yeah.
That's very similar to what's been going on in the news about all of this, the situation where there's been a lot of police brutality in the last year. You know, so they don't want these stories to appear. In fact, I remember one of the things that happened recently as a response to Ferguson was the St. Louis Rams. A lot of the African-American members of the team were holding their hands up on the sidelines as a protest.
Yes.
The head of the police union, either the head of the police union or the chief of police for St. Louis, wrote an angry letter that was publicly published saying that they shouldn't be allowed to do this.
Right. Well, he asked that the NFL discipline them for that, which you can't discipline someone for their freedom of speech.
Exactly. Also, another thing that just came up, I heard that it was passed in Illinois that it's now illegal to take a photograph of a police officer.
Yeah, I heard that as well.
Which is just...
Well, because there have been a lot of people who have been recording their interactions with police officers because they don't know what's going to happen.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's a self-defense thing, and I don't know. But, you know, this is a whole nother discussion.
It is.
And I think the biggest... Just to give you my 2 cents in a very small package... I think the big issue here is the militarization of police.
Yeah.
That's the problem. And that started with what the Patriot Act, exactly, which is very unpatriotic, in fact.
Well, but even then, it's interesting to see how this film, which was made in 1990, touches on the same subjects that we're wrestling with almost 30 years after the fact.
God, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, genius.
But that's actually... That is one area of the film where they do kind of strike on something that's interesting.
The Foot Clan, ISIS.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the thing. It's always cool and interesting when you can see an older film and tie it into modern day.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that's always going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, at some point we're going to find another film and be like, oh my gosh, this film is from decades ago ties in today somehow.
Yeah.
It'll happen.
Definitely. It will.
But you know what does not happen? When you hit someone with a golf club, they do not physically go flying. And that happened in this movie when Casey Jones hit the head of, like, the Foot Clan guys. He hit him with a golf club, and he went flying across the room.
I really thought that was real.
I bet you did. Because, see, violence is fun. Violence is very fun.
Uh-huh.
If you eat your Whoppers and hit people with golf clubs and baseball bats...
Can I play pool and smoke at the same time?
You... Hey, if you're going to do your petty thefting... All
right.
Go ahead.
Let's talk about the Foot Clan's child lair, because that place looked cool.
Yeah, it actually looked like a lot of fun. It looks like a place I'd like to hang out.
It's like pool tables, arcade games. Yes. I loved that they had a skateboard ramp built on top of the arcade games.
That was actually very cool.
It was really cool.
Like, really cool design. Yes, I did see that. I did see that, and it made me pine for the days of, like, legitimate arcades.
Oh, yeah, like going to the arcade in the mall or going to the roller rink and playing video games and stuff like that.
And that's why every now and then I want to go back to Dave & Buster's because, I mean, it's a modern-day arcade, and how often do you see arcades anymore?
Well, now you can get the arcade things for your house
that have
30 or 40 games just preloaded onto it.
How expensive are these things? Man, I would like to have
they're
that.
A few $100, unfortunately.
I'd like to get one and build a skateboarding ramp around it.
Yes.
And I'll pay you, Jordan, to come and skateboard around me while I play my video games.
I'm a pretty klutzy guy. I might fall on top of you.
Okay, well then forget that.
But if we could I have a 12-year-old that we can.
Okay, yeah, he can come and skateboard.
Exactly, and then let him play video games and show him how.
And then if we can get him to steal some things for us, give him some Whoppers in return. Right.
Mom, Dad, if you're listening, I'm being entirely facetious.
Yes.
But you know, this film is enjoyable in some parts and kind of ridiculous in others. One of the more ridiculous parts of the film that was supposed to be enjoyable but was a little on the wacky side was this idea that a normal rat could learn ninjutsu.
Yes.
By watching somebody practice.
And I will say it's pretty funny because my my older sister always loves it when I quote one in particular part of the movie.
Yeah.
Because this is something we've done over time. He's like, mimicking his movements from my cage.
Yes.
And the funny thing is when they're saying that, like, the motions Splinter's making as a little rat look ridiculously funny.
They do. I mean, I guess for a kid's movie it's perfectly fine, but as an adult I was like...
So laughable.
Really?
So funny, man. Yeah. The movie doesn't age well.
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't at all.
It doesn't.
Yeah, I mean, you can't really fault it for that necessarily just because they're making movies to make money in the present. They're not like, we want this to be remembered decades down the road as a great film.
Well, and that's one of the tough things is we talked about in Django Unchained how we love period pieces.
Yeah.
You know, and it's kind of funny to watch a movie that's made in modern times because it acts as a period piece for that time.
Right.
But
it's one of our period pieces that we lived through.
Yeah.
So it's a little tougher to appease us in that sense.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
It's rough.
It is.
But, you know.
Well, I think we've pretty much covered everything that I had to cover on Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. What about you?
Yeah, I don't really think I have anything else except Sam Rockwell.
Oh my gosh, I can't believe I missed him.
You gotta go back and just look for him. Or just go on Google and Google image Sam Rockwell in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I'm sure it'll show up.
I'm sure it will show up.
I'll show you after we're done recording.
I really kind of wish that Drew Barrymore was also in the movie, so then it would just be complete. All right.
And they were both nude.
Yeah. Yeah, well, anyway, let's go ahead and get off that topic. Do you want to go ahead and give your thoughts on the movie?
Yeah, I can do that. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, it does not hold up over time. I am not happy that I saw this as an adult. It ruined my memory of it as an awesome movie from when I was a child. As we said, the music is very 80s, which is appropriate, but the music also in a lot of the fight scenes is a little too comedic, too upbeat, makes it kind of ridiculous. The pacing for me was too fast. I would have liked some actual like story, but then again, I guess kids don't really care that much about story. You know, like I said, the voice acting was a little too drawn out and just not all that great. The acting in general was just eh. We didn't like the fact that, you know, there are no strong female characters in there, and April O'Neil, who you're supposed to be experiencing everything through, is just things are happening to her.
And she's a non-entity.
Yeah, she's not doing anything. It's just kind of like, whatever. Man, I didn't really enjoy watching this movie, honestly. I mean, there were a few cool things, like, Jordan, I'm glad you brought up the fact that the Foot Clan hangout was pretty sweet, the way they designed that. All in all, I wouldn't really recommend watching this as an adult. If you're still a child, maybe. Not sure you should be listening to this podcast if you are a child, though. So, but anyway, I'd give it a 1.5 star.
Okay.
1.5.
Wow. Well, Carlin, I gotta say, I'm sorry that this one wasn't as good for you as it was for me.
It's fun.
Because, I mean, you know, this was my opportunity to see a movie that I wanted to see.
Which I think we should do. Yeah. Like, I do that from time to time with this podcast. I'll be like, there's something that's been sitting in my queue. This is a perfect opportunity to see it. And yeah. Dual purpose. I just want to see it, but doing an episode is great.
Well, and you know, I think I was looking at it more through the eyes of the kid than I was as the adult.
Right.
And first time that you see this movie and everything like that, my expectations were fairly high, but not as high as they could have been. And I enjoyed it from the perspective of getting to see it for the first time. So, you know, I was a little disappointed in some of the relationships of the characters. And, you know, I felt like, oddly enough, there wasn't a lot of emphasis put on the turtles, per se. There was a lot more emphasis on the Foot Clan, for whatever reason. And that kind of was disappointing to me. I wanted to see more of the turtles in action, see how they interacted and everything like that. But overall, I thought it was a good movie for the time, and I thought it was an all right movie for the demographic. And because I enjoyed it, I'm going to go ahead and give it 3 stars.
3 stars?
Yeah, I liked it. I thought it was all right.
Okay, so what does that translate to? You made the math a little harder for me.
Yeah,
so is it 2.25?
Yeah, so it's 1.5 for you.
And 3 for you.
3 for me, so that's 4.5 divided by 2.
We're doing the math out loud.
Doing the math out loud. I don't do math well in my head, so. But yeah, that's about 2.25.
It's exactly 2.25.
Yeah.
So, without really thinking, I did the math and I got it right. I said two.
But I confirmed it. Nice.
Well, good job. That's why we're a team.
That's Jordan. Right. That's why we're right.
Like, you are, which turtle do you want to be?
I always thought of myself as Leonardo.
Well, I originally identified with Leonardo, and then later on, I identified with Donatello. So, Donatello's
my
dude.
Donatello's not the one that people typically choose.
No, not. But he was more of the intellectual, which I kind of liked about him.
Yeah, Leonardo was more of the spiritual.
The leader.
One. Yeah. Well, I mean, not
spiritual, but also like the leader of the group.
Yeah. I never really saw myself as the leader. I mean, I didn't see his role as the leader role either. He was just the one that they turned to when they couldn't figure things out.
Right.
So he had to answer questions for the rest of them. It wasn't so much of, you're going to do this. It was like, why are you looking at me? Do this.
Yeah.
So that's, I guess that is a type of leadership, but it's not like an alpha dog kind of leadership.
Got it. So you're Leonardo, I'm Donatello.
Dude.
Righteous.
Cowabunga.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much for listening to Carlin and Jordan's Most Excellent Movie Night. I hope you enjoyed this one. I think we had a lot of fun recording this episode.
Oh, yeah. Well, here's the thing. We typically have fun recording the episodes, even if it's a movie we totally hated.
Yeah.
Or a movie we totally loved. It doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
We have a good time because we always have good stuff to talk about.
Yeah.
That's what it's all about, man.
That's what it's all about, man. So, do you want some pizza, like some Domino's, or do you want Burger King?
I want neither, because I don't eat either of those, honestly.
But you're missing out. There's so many good
But Domino's good, Burger King evil, apparently.
Yeah, that's all you need to remember. So thanks again for listening. We hope you have a good one. If you want to reach us by Twitter, I'm at JD Dennis.
I'm at Brutal Battle for my Brutal Battle beer podcast. That's BREWTAL and Battle.
Yep. And we hope that you tune in next time. Thanks so much for listening.
You've been listening to Carlin and Jordan's Most Excellent Movie Night.
Our theme music was provided by Sweet Wave Audio. To find more royalty-free music for your own projects, check out sweetwaveaudio.co.uk.
And special thanks to Ariana Ramos for her graphic design savvy helping us with our album art.
Visit our website at mostexcellentmovienight.com to listen to other episodes, give us your opinion, and share with us other movies you'd like to have reviewed.
You can also contact us through our email address, mostexcellentmovienight@gmail.com. We would love to read them on the air.
Also, if you could rate and review the podcast on iTunes, we would be your friends for life.
For sure. That's all for now. Thanks for listening to Carlin and Jordan's Most Excellent Movie Night,
where movies are most excellent. This has been a Nerd Circle podcast production.